Good evening, Bante. Good evening, brothers and sisters in the Dharma. Good evening. This evening's session is a question and answer forum. And basically, we are going to be discussing a couple of very important points. If you remember, in the last Q&A forum last week, we discussed about the elimination of the five hindrances, followed by the gradual attainment of the four jhanas. So this evening's session is a continuation of last week's discussion. We are going to explore now what happens after you have attained the four jhanas. What else is possible beyond the four jhanas? And we are also going to discuss a couple of very interesting matters. So today's discussion topic, the first one actually we're going to talk a little bit about is this Samadhi Bhavana Sutra. And this is actually a sutra that the Buddha mentioned that there are four kinds of Samadhi. So we're going to ask Bante to elaborate and explain a little bit about what are the four kinds of Samadhi. And the second topic we're going to talk about is basically what I just mentioned, that is bhavana, the cultivation of mind beyond the four jhanas. And basically what we have talked about last week is talking about the elimination of the five hindrances and also the cultivation of these five constituents of ecstasy or five constituents of jhanas that make up the jhana. And that enables us to enter into this Rupa Bhava, the imagery realm, where we will experience the four jhanas in gradual stages. What Bante is going to explain today is what happens after that, because then the mind, by that time, the mind would have eliminated or reduced the affective process, the citta, completely. Now, the next stage would be the elimination of the mano, which is the cognitive process. So, to begin with, we talk about the four cultivations of samadhi. So in this Anguttara Nikaya, Book of Fours, Sutra number 41, Samadhi Bhavana Sutra, where the Buddha spoke that there are four kinds of cultivations of samadhi. The first is dwelling happily in this very life. The second one is attaining knowledge and vision. The third one is introspection and clear comprehension. And the fourth one is destruction of all defilements. Now, these are not Bante's translation because I didn't manage to get Bante's translation on this. But Bante has the Pali, so perhaps Bante could enlighten us whether my translation here is suitable. I try to do it as best as I can from what I understand of Bante's translations. So Bante, perhaps you could help enlighten us, elaborate on what are these four kinds of samadhis.
So the sutra, as it has been translated into English, I will just read the sutras and try to explain it. Because the Buddha, I suppose, is saying this, because there are these four developments of concentration. There is these translations, as I have told you many times, the translations don't bring out the meaning. So these translations have been misleading people. And they say there are these four developments of concentration. But this is a wrong translation. Instead of saying concentration, we have to put the word samadhi. This is, here the Buddha is talking about samadhi. There are four kinds of samadhi. And samadhi doesn't mean concentration. So out of these four, now he begins to describe, there is a samadhi that leads to dwelling happily in this very life. Now there is a samadhi that leads to dwelling happily in this very life. Now the best way to put it is, instead of calling it just samadhi, the better word is to say a purification of mind. Instead of using the word concentration, this is, there is a kind of, four kinds of purifying the mind, or four kinds of purification of mind. Then the meaning comes out. Because concentration is the wrong translation and gives the wrong meaning. Samadhi here means purification of mind. You understand, huh? Now, if you talk about water, now water can be purified. Are there several ways of purifying the water? Now, one kind of purification is what is called distillation. Distillation is one kind of purification. What is the other kind of purification? So, in any case, you know two ways of purifying, which is, one is the distillation and the other is the filtration. So, in the same way, there are four ways of purifying the mind here. That the Buddha talks about four ways of purifying the mind. And one way of purifying the mind, he makes you dwell happily in this very life. Now another method of purifying is where you obtain knowledge and vision. You see, some time back, I spoke about the mind. There are two parts of the mind, the emotional part and the thinking part. The emotional part, we said, was what is called chitta, and the thinking part is what is called mano. So, mano refers to the thinking part and chitta refers to the emotional part. And modern psychologists have two names for these two parts. The thinking part is called the cognitive and the emotional part is called the affective. So, this is very important to know that you have two parts of what we call the mind, the thinking part and the emotional part. Now, it is very important to understand that the emotional part cannot think. The emotional part cannot think. Thinking can be done only by the thinking part. The thinking part is an activity of the brain. It is the brain that does the thinking. And the emotional part is an activity of the entire body. Very important to understand that. And the emotional part cannot think. Now, if you become angry, that is a disturbance of the emotional part. if you desire something or become lustful or passionate or sexually excited, that is the emotional part getting disturbed. It is a disturbance not of the mind, it is a disturbance of the whole body. So, but there is no thinking. The emotional excitement is not thinking, but it is associated with the thinking. Without thinking, the emotion cannot get excited. These two parts are related, but they are two different things. You have to understand that. If you think in the wrong way, emotions can get excited. If you think in the right way, the emotions stop getting excited, which is, it becomes calm. So this is something that you have to understand before we can understand what the Buddha is saying here. Now, here the Buddha speaks about four methods. We'll find out what this first method is. The first method is, and what bhikkhus is the development of concentration or the development of purification of mind, that leads to dwelling happily in this very life. In this very life. Here, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in the first jhana, which consists of rapture, pleasure born of seclusion, accompanied by thought and examination. With the subsiding of thought and examination, he enters and dwells in the second jhana, which has internal placidity and unification of mind and consists of rapture and pleasure born of concentration, without thought and examination, with the fading away as well as rapture, he dwells equanimous and mindful and clearly comprehending. He experiences pleasure with the body. He enters and dwells in the third. You see, this translation doesn't really convey the meaning that is necessary.
Okay, Bhante, may I suggest, in view of the shortage of time, because we have other things to discuss, maybe, Bhante, you translate it and we will discuss this topic another time. Uh-huh. Would that be better? Because otherwise, we are all sitting here looking at the sutra.
Yeah.
We won't be able to get the other questions answered.
Okay.
So we'll continue on this.
So the important thing here is, I don't have to explain the four jhanas.
Yeah, not the four jhanas, but the others. But the others.
Because here, what was called dwelling happily in this very life really refers to the four jhanas. And I have been explaining these four jhanas earlier.
Yeah.
And in the four jhanas, the most important thing is to get rid of what are called the five hindrances. Vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekagata, which I have described earlier many times.
Yeah.
So okay, I don't have to waste time on that.
Yeah. So perhaps in the next occasion, on another occasion, Bhante explain to us about attaining knowledge and vision, introspecting, clear comprehension, and destruction of taints according to the sutra.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll talk about it.
Jhanas, we said, even the word jhana means, we translate it as ecstasy. Now, ecstasy means standing out. Ek means out, stasi means standing. Now, what that means is, if you get out of this room and stand outside the door, that is called ecstasy. Now, that is the meaning of jhana. Now, jhana is standing out. Out of what? Standing out of the emotional world. Normally, all the people who are born in this world is born into the emotional world. From the time you are born, you are getting excited emotionally. This is why the child that is born begins to cry. That crying itself is an indication that that person is emotionally excited. You see, you enter the emotional world the moment you are born, and you don't know how to get out of that emotional world.
Yeah. Okay.
But you know, there were some monks during the time of the Buddha, at the age of 7, came out of the emotional world. At the age of 7. Why? Because the thinking part begins to function only at that age. But these were really people who were coming from the Devalokas, who had been practicing meditation for many lives, and they had already purified the mind to a great extent, and now they are born in this world. The moment they enter the 7th, age 7, they are ready. If they see the Dhamma, they know how to get out and stand out. That is the first ecstasy, the second ecstasy, and so on. Yeah, you have something, yeah? Yeah. So that is we are talking about that second one. No, the first one, dwelling happily in this very life. That is the way that you can dwell happily in this very life. If you stand out of the emotional world. Okay. Now the second one. And what is the development of concentration that leads to obtaining knowledge and vision? Here a bhikkhu attempts to the perception of light. He focuses on the perception of day thus, as by day, so at night, as at night, so by day, thus. With a mind that is open and uncovered, he develops a mind imbued with luminosity. This is the development of concentration that leads to obtaining knowledge and vision.
And they shall.
Now that is the alok, that is called. What's the problem?
It's okay, carry on.
Yeah. Aloka sanya. Now this is a kind of meditation that you usually don't get in commonly in the sutras. But this is a kind of meditation that. Even at night, you are focusing on light, in the sense that you are not looking at light. You are keeping your mind awake as if you are experiencing the daytime. You see, you're not focusing on the darkness. You are focusing on the light, but till you really do this, you don't know what it means. That is very important. It's difficult for you, normal people, to understand or even imagine. But you know that if you close your eyes, you can imagine this whole building and everything in the way that you saw during daytime. You only have to close your eyes and imagine. That can be done. So if you spend your whole night doing that is meditating on the light. You don't have to have a light to do that. This is all in your imagination. So that kind of meditation. So in other words, you are not sleeping at night. Now, when the meditation develops to a certain level, the monks who are meditating, they don't sleep at all. This is very important to understand. If you read the sutras, you will find the Buddha talking to the monks whole night. And sometimes you find the Buddha lying down but awake and asking Sariputta or Moggallana to continue talking to the monks. And that whole night they are just listening to the Buddha. They have no time to sleep. There is no such thing as sleeping for the monks who are meditating properly. So they may be in the dark, they didn't have torches or lanterns or any of those things at night. They were sitting under trees. You see, in the dark, but they are living as if it is daytime. So it is very important to understand that meditation is not just 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes in the evening and then sleeping at night. That is not the kind of meditation that the Buddha is talking about. So this is very important to understand. So this is a kind of meditation like that. That is the second kind. Then the third kind, what is the development of concentration that leads to mindfulness and clear comprehension? What is the meaning of mindfulness and clear comprehension? These are translations that mislead the people who are reading it. Mindfulness and clear comprehension simply means mindfulness is a word used for satipatthana. Satipatthana is not mindfulness. Satipatthana means, sati means attention. Upatthana is to place the attention inside. To place the attention inside, you have to take the attention away from outside. That means you have to withdraw your attention from the external surroundings and focus your attention within, which is really called introspection. The English word for that is not mindfulness, it is called introspection. Introspection means looking within, focusing your attention within. And when you focus your attention within, are you using your eyes? Are you using your ears? Are you using your nose? Are you using your tongue? Are you using your body, sense of touch? you are not using any of those things. Focusing in your attention within means it's only the mind. With the mind you look within, not with your eyes or ears or nose or any of those things. Looking within, and what are you looking at? You are looking at the body, kayanupassana, vedananupassana, how the body feels, chittanupassana, the emotional excitements, dhammanupassana. There, dhamma doesn't mean the Buddha dhamma here. Dhamma means the thought in your mind. Any thought that arises in the mind, you are looking at. Because Dhamma doesn't mean the teachings of the Buddha. The teaching of the Buddha is called Buddha Dhamma. There are good dharmas as well as bad dharmas. The good dharma is called Kusala Dharma. Bad dharma is called Akusala Dharma. So every dharma is not good dharma, and every dharma is not the Buddha dharma. Very important to understand that. Dharma simply means the thought. Now, the chakku, rupa, sota, sadda, in the same way, mano, dhamma. The object of mano is dhamma. Mano is the thinking. And what are you thinking about? That is the Dhamma, the object of thinking. So Dhamma here, Dhammanupassana means you are looking at the thoughts in your mind. These all looking in, not looking out. So when you practice that, that is called Satipatthana. You are looking at four things: Kayanupassana, Vedananupassana, Chittanupassana, and Dhammanupassana. So you see, but here there is another one: mindfulness and clear comprehension. What is that thing called? Clear comprehension. That is also mistranslation. Sati Sampajanya. It is the Sampajanya that has been translated as clear comprehension. That if the translator doesn't understand what is being said, the translation is wrong. You see, when you look within, that is what is called Satipatthana. Satipatthana is looking within, which is introspection. Then when you look within, what are you doing? If I look at this, what do I do? When I look, I am observing what is here. So Sampajanya is observation. Introspective observation. You are looking within and observing what is there. That is the meaning of Sampajanya. So that word clear comprehension has something close to observation, but it is still misleading. It doesn't explain properly what is being done. You focus your attention within and observe what is going on there. That is the important thing to understand. So this is why the translations are misleading. It's good that they translated at least to that extent. But unfortunately, if the translator doesn't understand what is being said, the translation goes wrong and misleads the reader. Okay, that is the meaning of the second one.
Third one.
The third one. So the third one, what is the development of concentration that leads to destruction of the tenth? What is the destruction of the tenth? Then again the translation is misleading. This is the, what is the Pali word here?
Asava, Bhante. Eradication of asava.
Asavanam khaya. Asavanam khaya. That is the Pali word. Now, asavanam khaya means asavas. Khaya means completely, stopped. The stopping of the asava. And what is asava? That is also mistranslated. This word sava is the starting root of this. Sava is coming from sru. Sru. Sru is a word for the English word flowing, flowing. We say sur 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 sur, you know, that is the flowing. You see, when water is flowing, we get the sound sur 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 sur. That sru, the sru becomes su. And sir, so sava means flowing. Asava means flowing in, like gachati and agachati. Gachati means going, agachati means coming. So in the same way, flowing is flowing out, and the inflow, flowing in, flowing in. What is the best English word for that?
Influence.
Huh?
Influence.
Influence. That's right. The influence. That means our mind gets polluted through the influence of what you see. When you look at something, your mind gets spoiled. Because the desire rises or hatred arises. So your mind became polluted by what you saw, which flowed in, the impurity flowed in from outside. It is not something coming from inside. It is something coming from outside. This is a very important thing to understand. You see, when I went to United States in 1980s, not 1980, 1970, when I went there, and I told the American people that the Buddha was able to get rid of all lust, hate, and delusion, they laughed at me. They laughed. I asked, why are you laughing? They said, how can that happen? According to Sigmund Freud, you can never get rid of lust, hate, and delusion because it is all built in here. And it is called an instinct. Instinct means something coming from inside here and not something coming from outside in. You understand? It is not something coming from outside in, but something coming from inside out. That is how Sigmund Freud saw it. At that time, I didn't know enough psychology to explain to them the right thing. But of course, once I went there, I studied more psychology. And then I began to realize that there was a school of psychology that came after Freud, and they had already discovered that the thoughts we think is responsible for the emotional state. And the thoughts we think is the important thing there. And today, the school of psychology called cognitive psychology, they are pointing out that the emotions can be got rid of by controlling the thoughts you think. Then only they began to realize the first verse in the Dhammapada. The first verse in the Dhammapada, what is it saying? Mano pubbangama dhamma. What does that mean? The thought, mano, usually people translate mano as mind. Mano is not just mind. Mano is the thinking part, the cognitive part of the mind. The thinking part of the mind, mano, not the chitta. Chitta is the emotional part. Mano is the thinking part. Mano setta, mano maya. That the thinking part is dominating the mind. Manasa che paduttena bhasati va karoti va tatonan dukkamangveti. What does that mean? When the thinking part, if it is done in the wrong way, if you think in the wrong way, the emotions will get excited, and then that will lead to fighting, quarreling, and all the unhappiness in the world. But if you begin to think in the right way, the emotions will calm down. There is no emotional excitement, and as a result, your behavior will be peaceful and happy. The Buddha has been saying this long before these cognitive psychologists began to talk about this. But the Buddhists don't know about this. Unfortunately, the Buddhists are completely ignorant about that. And they are carried away by the modern people, and they don't know what they are doing. You see, the important thing here is that we have to understand what the Buddha is trying to say here. This is what the Buddha is pointing out, that the destruction of the tense means that you are stopping. This is why the Buddha said, Pabhasara midam bhikkave chittang agantuka upakkile sehi upakkilittang. What does that mean? The mind in its normal state is pure. Pabhasara midam bhikkave chittang. Like water. Water in its original state is pure. Today you ask any scientist, they'll tell you water means H2O. What is H2O? That is pure water. It's a combination of hydrogen and oxygen. And that pure water is pure. You don't have to clean. But if you try to find pure water in the world, you'll never find it. Even rainwater is not pure water. Even water in the ocean is not pure water. If you dig a well and get water, that is also not pure water. That is why they have to find ways of purifying water. In the same way, the mind is a pure thing, but it is never found in the pure form, in the normal state. But the mind gets polluted only from outside, dirt coming in. In the same way, the pure water gets dirty only from foreign matter falling into it. It's the same thing. So the purity and impurity comes from outside, and it is because of that that water can be purified, and it is because of that that the mind can be purified. So when those people laughed at me and the Buddha, they are laughing out of ignorance. You see, it's very important to know these things. This is what the Buddha is trying to say here. And this destruction of taints happens only when you are able to understand what are normally called the five aggregates. When can you become aware of the five aggregates? Only when you come to the fourth jhana. Only at the fourth jhana, that means the fourth ecstasy, you begin to become aware. Now, this is something that I have explained earlier. I don't need to tell you that. So this is something that I have already told earlier, that when you are in the fourth jhana, it's very important to understand that the jhana is, I told you, is standing out. So the first standing out is called the first jhana. And standing out means coming out of the emotional world. So the first step out of the emotional world is the first jhana. Although you have come out of the emotional world, you are still aware of the world. That means when you open your eyes, if you see something, you see, oh, this is a bottle, this is a glass, or this is a table. So this is a microphone. So I may not be emotionally excited, but still I am aware that there are things around me. That is forming a concept. I have what is called conceptual thinking, forming a concept. And that conceptual thinking has two parts to it. The first part is to ask a question, what is this? And the second part is answering the question, this is a microphone. What is this? This is a table. What is this? This is a recorder. You see, always there is a question and an answer. That is what is called vitakka and vichara. The word vichara refers to questioning. Vichara is to question. Vitakka is forming the concept, a rational concept, vitakka and vichara. Then the vitakka vichara. Then at the second ecstasy, you stop doing that. You stop forming concepts. You may open your eyes and you may see things, but you don't ask the question, what is this? And you don't answer the question, this is such and such. The thinking part has been stopped. But still you may be seeing things, but the thinking part has stopped. That is the second jhana. But there you are experiencing a certain amount of peace and comfort. The peace and comfort is there. Then you try to give up that also. Even that experience of peace is seen as an excitement, and you calm down that So the piti, that is the piti, and sukha is the comfort. The comfort remains, but the peace is gone. That doesn't mean that you become unhappy and excited. It's an absence of even that peace which is seen as an excitement. Then you give up that comfort also. Then what are you left with? Even the comfort is gone, that doesn't mean that you become uncomfortable. You are left with a neutral feeling. And in that neutral feeling, you are in the fourth jhana. And in the fourth jhana, your attention is taken off the object. You are now not even looking at the object. And what are you looking at? Now you are looking at the subjective experience. And the subjective experience is not what you see, but how you see. You are becoming aware of the process of perception. So it is only when you are aware of the process of perception that you begin to become aware that what you are aware of is simply a picture. You are aware of a picture. That picture is the rupa. The word rupa refers to the picture. And the feeling of pleasantness or unpleasantness or the neutral feeling, vedana. Vedana is the feeling. And what you see is the sanya. And sanya, and out of the vedana and the sanya, you are creating the picture. The picture comes into being only by combining the vedana and the sanya, like making a wall out of bricks. So the vedana and the sanya becomes the bricks. And then you create the picture and you are able to identify the picture. And that identification is what is called vijnana. So when we talk about rupa, vedana, sanya, sankar, and vijnana, we are referring to the process of perception. We are analyzing the process of perception. We are breaking it up into five constituents of the process of perception. That is the meaning of, and it is only by understanding that that we are able to completely purify the mind by breaking the influences. We break the influences. That breaking of the influences coming from outside. So I hope you understood.
Okay, Bhante, I think we may not have much time to start talking about the next topic. Because the next topic we want to talk about is how, when we reach the fourth jhana, how the mind can continue on to the imageless realm, the arupa bhava. I think that we leave it for next time, Bhante. Mm-hmm. We leave the arupa samadhi to the next time.
Yeah.
So we open the floor to questions now.
No, we have finished all the four.
Yeah, we finished those four. Now We open the floor to the questions. We let them ask questions.
Question.
Yeah, I think some people
have
questions.
For the next time.
Yeah, the rest we will leave for next time.
Yeah.
So this imageless realm, Arupa Bhava, we will leave for the next time because it's quite lengthy for Bhante to explain that. And it's a very important topic to explain in detail because that would lead us to have this understanding of Nirodha Samapatti, which is stopping the mind completely. And that is what Bhante calls the state of insentience, avijja. And from there, when the Buddha reached that state, emerging from that state, the Buddha saw the unfolding of the Paticchasamuppada. So it's quite a lengthy discussion, so we will leave it for the next time.
That is how you have to take these five things. These are five steps on the path. Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya. Saddha means you start with devotion. Devotion means you have turned your attention on the goal, that is goal orientation. Saddha is a goal orientation. You have turned in the right direction. Virya means you have to start now working. It's like if you are driving a car, the first thing is that you have to turn your car in the right direction. After you have turned your car in the right direction, the next step is to start pressing your accelerator so that the car will start moving. So virya is like that. You press the accelerator to start moving. Then sati is focusing your attention within to purify the mind. That is the meaning of sati. Because here, although we compared this to turning your car, now your car is turning inwards, not outwards. You have to start going inwards, and that is why the sati. That leads to samadhi. Samadhi is complete purity of mind. Once the mind has been purified, you have at least entered the fourth jhana, fourth ecstasy. And once you have entered the fourth ecstasy, the next thing is panya. And that means you are now looking at the process of perception and you are able to analyze that and see it as rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara and vijnana. That's the meaning of that. It is a complete step-by-step summary of what we just spoke.
Bhante, my question is on akaliko.
Huh?
Akaliko. Akaliko.
Sankara.
Akaliko, as in like always commonly translated as timeless. One of the Dhammanupasati.
What they say?
Akaliko.
Akaliko?
Yes.
Akaliko.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, there are many times in understanding this term, akaliko, we
akaliko
kind of
means?
Look at things in the present moment. We kind of look at things in the present moment as experiential.
No, akaliko means independent of time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So what we see in an experiential mode, what we see in an experiential mode, we see things independent of time. But in a worldly process, we see in a lot of canons, canonical translations, present, past, and future. We see things in terms of present, past, and future. So can Bhante define how do
independent we... Independent of time means We are not talking about the past, present, and future.
That's right. So how do you define, how do you define a moment?
How do you define?
A moment.
Moment?
Yes, like a present moment. This moment of mine may not be the same as his moment.
The word moment comes from the idea of time.
Yes.
If you are not talking about time, there is no moment.
Yeah, because two people cannot have the same time, and two people cannot be in the same now. So how did this concept of time was defined during the Buddha's...
No, when you talk about two people, you are talking about space. These two things, space and time, are connected. The moment you speak of two people, you are talking about space.
Okay.
So space and time are connected in that way. So both space and time has to disappear. It comes from the idea of existence.
This is Nama Rupa.
Yeah. The moment you are talking about space and time, you are talking about existence. So when you are out of existence, there is no space, there is no time.
I see. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hi, Bhante. Just now you talked about the two parts of the mind, the mano, the thinking part, and the citta, which you describe as the emotional part of the mind. So my question is, what about the knowing mind? Is that part of the citta as well? Because I've heard some teachers use citta to describe the mind that knows.
The knowing comes from the thinking. So it is the thinking mind that knows anything. Knowledge is based on thinking. If there is no thinking, there is no knowledge.
I think I'm referring more to the knowing that we have in meditation, like when you know, for example, you are you know your body or your feelings.
How can you know without thinking? You see, you have to understand that all these normal animals, they don't have the thinking mind properly developed. They can't know anything. Some people don't have all the five senses. We have at least eyes, ears, nose, tongue. All animals don't have those five senses. Only a few animals have some senses, and they are also not properly working. It is the human being who has this ability to think and reason out. Can you get a monkey to add two and three together? You can't, they can't even do any thinking in the form of rational thinking. But this human being has this ability to think and reason out. And it is because of that ability that the human being begins to understand things. That is the meaning of understanding, knowing things. If you are not born as a human being, you won't know anything. This is a problem.
So is it then you're saying that the mano is the one, the mind? Mano is the mind that knows, is it?
Yeah. Chitta is the emotional excitement.
Okay.